Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for today's show, we're going to be discussing what we can learn from animals. So please feel free to participate or just to listen. And let me welcome Kat, who suggested the topic for tonight. I'm always grateful to get suggestions. And so, Kat, how are you tonight?
I'm fabulous. Thank you, David. And I do apologize if it's a little difficult to hear me. I've had to call in on Facebook because we're having a few problems with the telephone line. So I apologize if I sound a bit tinny or distant. We're doing our best with the technology we have available.
No problem. Well, you know, we're fortunate that we have technology, period, to communicate and broadcast and all of that stuff. But we're spoiled, I think, and we expect everything to work perfectly all the time, and it just isn't that way.
No, it isn't,
yeah.
Especially when telephone companies forget that, conveniently forget that you've put USA as one of your countries that you ring off in, so you should get really, really discounted rate.
Oh, boy.
And, oh, look, we forgot that. Now we're going to charge you a lot.
Oh, boy. Goody, goody.
Yeah. So we've got to get all that sorted out, and then we'll go back. I'm Scottish by origin, so I'm not going to spend money when I shouldn't.
Same here. Same here. I'm Scotch-Irish, so at any rate, but it's good to be frugal. And, you know, I mean, that's one lesson we can learn from animals, isn't it? They're very frugal. They know how to conserve, and, you know, a lot of humans just are all into consumption. And, you know, there certainly are many lessons that we can learn from animals. How did you happen to come up with the topic? What inspired you?
A couple of different things. I think the other day I was at a shopping center and I saw a woman dressed and she looked like she was grieving, and that reminded me of my own grief of having lost my beloved Prometheus pussycat last year. He was my darling for 13 years of my life, and I know that you'd lost someone, your Renny, last year as well. And it's sort of all of that reminded, I got reminded of that. And then it was coming up for Anzac Day. Anzac is Australian New Zealand Army Corps. And Anzac Day is our Memorial Day here in this region. And a lot of people remember the animals as well as the humans who've had to die in war or serve in war and have come back damaged because of war. And so I thought, you know, I see David Attenborough talking about the wild being decimated, and I see animals in our lives every day. And, you know, I go for long drives to see my father and there's no dead insects on my windscreen anymore. And I don't know, just all... it was all in the melting pot, and I was like, well, we really need to focus more on animals. We focus a lot on ourselves, but, you know, there's greater than us out there. There's a whole extraordinary experience of life out there, big, small, furry, finned, feathered, scaled, and... you know, I think the thing that I admire about animals is they're not trying to be anybody else. They're just themselves. They don't have to prove themselves to anybody else. They just have to get better at whatever they're doing. You know, the lioness just has to learn how to hunt a little better. She's not in this big competition that humans put on themselves. Animals don't have to do that. They can just be. They don't sit in any kind of ego-driven falsity. They are just who they are. And although I understand that the progression of the soul is that we go through stages of animal life to get to human life, there is also the forgetting at every incarnation. And I think that human beings get to a point where they've become so evolved that they're humans that they forget that they are as intrinsically entwined with animals, more so than animals are intrinsically entwined with us. We rely on animals so much. We could not have this world without them. We could not eat without them. Even vegans could not eat without them. You know, you just have to look at the bees. Vegans couldn't eat without bees. No matter how much they don't want to eat honey, the bees do all the pollinating. Well, not all of it, but they do a fair whack of it. A lot of the insects do that. And so it doesn't matter how much you want to stay away from animal products, you are still reliant on animals, far more than animals are reliant on you.
Well, I think that we have wonderful lessons to learn from animals. Now, my experience with animals has been primarily with pets. I've had, oh boy, I'd have to count, but I've had over a dozen cats over my lifetime. And I've had seven dogs. And the one thing that seems to be a constant for me with regards to them is that they offer unconditional love. Now, how many humans can do that? I think it's a real mark of maturity, coming to understand oneself to be able to offer it. Most people are stuck in conditions attached to love. And animals just are, they're natural. So, you know, you talk about the evolutionary cycle of the soul from animals to people, and it amazes me that that quality has not followed forward into human incarnations, because I've found that it's taken me a lifetime to come to know people who love me unconditionally. And, you know, I could feel sad about that, because there are a lot of people from my past that just weren't able to do that. But I'm just grateful that I've come to that place. And every single animal I have owned, or that's owned me, I should say, has been such a touchstone to my heart and my soul. I feel such a connection with them, and they have been devoted to me. They've been very forgiving if I've done something that might have harmed them in some fashion. I mean, something like stepping on a paw or something like that. You know, they're very forgiving creatures. And, you know, you talked about Prometheus, and I was thinking about all the pets I've had who've passed away, and of course Remy was the most recent one. And she was just like a child to me. She, to lose her, I would liken to losing a child. And of course I haven't had the experience of raising a child, but I just felt such a close bond with her. I felt so protective toward her. She relied on me for virtually all of her basic needs. And so she was just like a young child, and it was so sad to have to let her go, but it was the kindest thing to do under the circumstances she was suffering. And that brings me to another subject we could discuss another time, but I'm not going to go there. At any rate, I'm glad you brought up the topic, Kat, and I have some stories to share at a later point in time, but what would you like, what are some of the things that you would like to talk about connected to the topic?
Well, I love that you're talking about the unconditional love, because that's, you know, that's what it is. And I know, okay, for some people this may sound a bit far-fetched, and for those people, please switch off. When I was doing my live event in 2016, I was doing shows where I would teach about spirit guides and angels and hierarchies and things like that to do with those higher vibrational beings. And then I would go with them and I would I would see a name, a guide that was around a person, and then I would use the pendulum over a list, and I would get the angel, which was usually correspondent to the guide. One particular night, the visions were very, very strong. They were extremely clear. And I went within and I saw a little white dog, and I described it accurately, and I saw that it had passed. And then when I mentioned that the woman was quite overwhelmed, yes, that is exactly what had happened. And then when I went within again, I saw this little white dog sort of spin and then become a tall, higher vibrational being who had chosen to incarnate as the little white dog to walk with her and help her through a period in her life. And she acknowledged that as well, and said that during the lifetime of that little white dog, she had been through many, many difficulties, and that she had come out of it, and so the time had come for the little white dog to pass away. So, animals don't just incarnate in the soul progression of learning. They also incarnate as an expression of love to assist us in our lives.
Mm.
And if you have spiritual understanding, then you'll understand that higher vibrational beings can utilize an animal body to do that. I think that there is no other way that you could bring that kind of comfort and love to a human. Because, quite frankly, some of the things that animals do would be creepy if they were humans. Like my cat sits and you open the door for him to come in, and he just sits at the doorway and stares and watches us. So if he was a human, that'd be damn creepy. But because he's a cat, you laugh at it. You know, oh, well, you know, that's him. This is the thing, you know, they bring so much comfort and they communicate with us so subtly, but the more that we tune into them, then the more we feel and hear them on an emotional and mental level and a spiritual level, and that's when we can really grow. They have been beasts of burden. You know, when I'm looking at the Australian War Animal Memorial Organisation, and I've also looked at a few different ones, and there's actually a National Day for War Animals here in Australia on the 24th of February every year, and that is to recognise the important roles animals have continued to play in Australia. And then we also have here the Australian War Animal Memorial Organisation, and that is for these darling to have incarnated to assist humans through their suffering of having to have wars. And this is the thing that I see with animals. They incarnate for specific reasons as well as their own reasons. I see that animals choose to incarnate as domesticated or wild, that many animals are on a wild path for quite a long time, that they may cross over part domestic, part wild. They may go into domestic and then want to go back into wild. I mean, especially if they were terribly abused by humans, they wouldn't want to reincarnate domestic again. But animals in war, you know, we're looking at dogs, horses, pigeons, beasts of burden, you know, donkeys. We're looking at dolphins, sea lions. In some of the research that I've read, they've even incorporated native and exotic animals to be used in the aid of comfort of defence personnel. That's a quote from the awamo.org.au website, which is Australian War Animal Memorial Organisation. Here they're talking about animals being used as mascots as well. Of course, remember World War II, pigeons were used a lot, camels, elephants. Elephants have had a part to play. Animals are being used in bomb detection, rats and pigs. You wouldn't think of a rat being used, but they have been. You know, they're very intelligent, actually, rats. I had a pet rat once, and she was quite a lovely little thing. And the house that I was living in, well, this was when I was a student, it was infested by mosquitoes and cockroaches, but my bedroom never had one because she ate anything that came in the room. She was fantastic. I just had to clean up after her, but I kept my toothbrush in my bedroom knowing it would never, ever be touched by anything yucky because she was there. And, yeah, so I just had to make sure I kept the place clean because rats pee. But she was amazing. I loved her so much. She unfortunately got breast cancer from the mammary gland going nuts, which apparently happens in rats if they haven't had babies. Yeah, so that was very, very sad. But, there's animals are being utilized in war for hundreds of, probably thousands of years. And they've done it. I can imagine how frightening it would be to be a horse riding into battle with an angry human on the back of you, hell-bent on killing or they'll be killed, and you've got to go straight towards those arrows and those big long knives and swords, and you're invariably going to have your legs cut off or something happen to you because that way it undermines the human on top of you, and yet you run in. That is unconditional love. That is self-sacrifice, and that is amazing. I often think about it, you know, when we depict animals in war, movies, we often see them, the way that the director puts them is that they, you know, utilized to undermine the human. There's not really a care by the villain about the animal's welfare. And I expect that that's the way it had been for a long time. There were particular horses that were bred for war here in Australia. I just can't remember the name of them. If there's anyone listening who can, please write it down in the comments. We will read the comments out as we go throughout the show. But, yeah, animals have been specifically bred for war as well, which is, you know, quite interesting. But I'm rambling on a bit here, David, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Well, if you call it a ramble, I'd say it's very illuminating. The one category of animals that we haven't talked about that I'm guessing they might have there, they have them here, are service animals that assist people that have some form of disability, be they blind, be they suffering from anxiety or depression, all sorts of different conditions that these animals are trained to provide assistance, to provide comfort. It's just a wonderful thing, and there's so much training that goes into it, but these animals are so intelligent and are well-trained when they are given to the grateful prospective owners. I have a friend who is blind who has a service dog, and of course, aside from assisting the person, they provide all of the other qualities that we've talked about, that unconditional love, that comfort, that companionship. That to me is so important, being that I am alone some of the time. I really appreciate the companionship of my pets. I currently have 4 cats and 1 dog. The dog is living with my husband, from whom I'm separated, but I get to see him every day. And it's just such a wonderful feeling when I come to see him. He's just filled with so much joy and love for me. He's so excited to see me. And I wish I could say the same thing from some humans that I haven't seen in a year. You know, animals are just, they're just right up front with their emotions. They don't have anything to hide. They are, they provide so many different qualities that we can enjoy. And for anybody that's never had a pet, they probably don't have a clue how important a bond can be formed between an owner and a pet. As I mentioned, I've been blessed to have several pets over the years, and one of them, I have a funny story to tell, and that is about a cat named Bandit. Well, Bandit snuck into our lives, and that's how he became named Bandit. My former partner and I went to a going-away party for a friend of ours, and we'd had quite a bit to drink, and we went out to the car and opened the door, and there was this stray cat that kept nudging up against us and obviously was not well taken care of. But anyhow, we got in the car and started to drive home. And halfway home, Al said to me, "There's something furry on my lap." And it was this cat. And so we named him Bandit. We thought it was a girl, and discovered when we took Bandit in to be spayed that he actually needed to be neutered instead. He was long-haired, and so...
You guys hadn't really gone and had a good look at it.
Yeah, no, we hadn't had a good look at it. But he was a wonderful cat. He lived to be 20, and I never realized how long some animals can live. My husband and I had a cat that had been a childhood cat of his. He'd had the cat since the age of 9, and Robbie Dobby was the name of the cat. He lived to be 25. And his daughter, Precious, who also was part of the household, lived to be 22. So it's amazing. They can be very long-lived. Unfortunately, not as long-lived as we are, and that's probably both a blessing and a curse, because who would want to have their animals outlive them and be left to an uncertain fate? It's sad, and this is why I've had so many animals over the years. They die. They die before we do, and So there's a lot of stockpiled grief that I have, which I've had to process over the years for all of these pets. I have had to nurse some pets through cancer. They're not immune to diseases like that. And they require a lot of care when they're sick like that. But no, I'm rambling. I'm rambling.
I think that's a lovely story, though, Bandit.
Oh, Bandit was... He was wonderful. Oh, there's one other dog I have to talk about. That's No Shame. Now, Robbie and I, my husband and I, were driving back from, we'd been getting things for our garden. And we had some heavy stuff in the back of the truck, so we took a circuitous route. And we're going through a neighborhood that we normally didn't go through. And at a stop sign, we saw this dog just loose looking at us. And Robbie opened the door, and the dog came prancing over and hopped in the car. Well, there were no tags on the dog. He was as friendly as could be and docile, and we asked a child that was nearby if they knew who this dog was, and they said they'd never seen it before. So what were we going to do? We took him home, and I called up animal control to see if there had been an animal reported as missing, and there had not been. There was a piece I was going to tell. It was about the child. The child said he didn't know the dog, but he said he thought his name might be Seamus. Well, that doesn't make any sense to me, that the child wouldn't know the dog and came up with a possible name. But going forward, animal control told us that if nobody reported a pet missing within 3 days, that we could adopt it. And I was not in a position where I wanted to adopt an animal, but we decided to just wait out the 3 days and see if somebody would claim him so that he could go back home. We had no dog food in the house, so we got out a half gallon of vanilla ice cream, and he polished that off. I figured, I figured he'd like that, and he did. And we did go out and get dog food for him, of course. But I mentioned to Robbie's mother, who also happened to be a lesbian, as we were gay, I said that, somebody thought his name might be Seamus, and she said, we've been getting enough shame as it is. Let's name him No Shame, because No Shame is good, and this looks like a good dog. So that's how we ended up with that name. And nobody claimed him. And at that point, I'd fallen in love with him, and so we adopted No Shame. He was the best dog I've ever had, and, that's with all due respect and love towards the other pets I've had. No Shame was so well-behaved, so loving. He didn't bark. He just welcomed everybody that we brought into our lives. He was a wonderful pet, and I miss him terribly. He's been gone for about 9 years now. But, always a special place in my heart for No Shame and all of the pets. So now I'll let go of that and see if you have a story or something else you'd like to share.
Well, that's a lovely story. I think animals have complex societies, too. They're not just, solitary beings that choose humans to be their slaves, which is what cats do. Cats, they basically adopt a human and then tell the human how they'd like to be treated. Thank you very much. You will feed me now, and you will clean me now, and you will give me this and that, and that will make me happy, and you'll be happy that I'm happy. But, yeah, it's more than that. And I think that human beings get a little bit caught up, especially if we live in the city and we're not rural. We get caught up in very, very human lives, and we don't have the connection with animals that we should have. And so we forget about connection. And to me, spirituality is connection. That's the deepest part of it, is connection, that you are connected to all things in a massive ecosystem that goes beyond this planet. This planet is part of a greater ecosystem. And so, animals have complex intrinsic social structures. I mean, you just have to look at ants and bees. Everybody has, the social structures of elephants and wolves, monkeys, dolphins. These creatures are not just sort of soulless beings that wander the planet and eat, sleep, excrete. They actually have a lot of stuff that they have to learn and go through. They have life lessons just as you and I do, and they have to learn about their place in society, in their own society. And, you can look up a whole lot of different natural history studies on animals to see that what I'm saying is correct. And anybody who's watched anything to do with David Attenborough or any of those guys would also agree. It's not a reptile. Reptiles are the only ones that just sort of drop eggs and walk away, but that's not the way it is with animals. So, they have a lot to teach us in how to action ourselves within society as well, because that's what they do. A lot of animals have to get along in order to survive. And things that they have to do is be loyal to one another. Loyalty means survival, looking after your own, being strong, being graceful, having that inner strength to stand up to something or someone that is not working well within the societal structure or who is threatening the societal structure. They also think hard before they make decisions, and they work well with each other. Because scientists are afraid of talking about telepathy, they don't fully grasp the whole way that animals communicate. But animals, I am certain, communicate through telepathic means as well as body language. But I teach my children, we've got fish. Obviously, I've talked about having fish for a long time. I absolutely love fish. And I'd like to say a big shout-out to Ohio Fish Rescue. If anyone likes YouTube, check them out. They're amazing. My fish will tell us when they're hungry, and they'll tell it through body language. But I will know without my cat knocking on the door that he's there. And that is because I am linked into his energy signature. I can feel him, and I think telepathically I can hear him too at times. So animals communicate in many different ways. They also live in the moment. They live in the now. They're very mindful in their lives, and they listen. They get aware of their surroundings. Have you ever walked into a shopping center and gone, or a supermarket and gone, oh, I don't know where anything is, I'm lost, and then stopped and looked around and absolutely absorbed where everything is, looked at all the signs and then found your way? Animals do that a lot. They use their sense of smell. They smell scent droppings that other animals have left. They listen out for different calls. They stop and they take things in. They use all their senses. They're connected. They know how to survive in the toughest of conditions as well. They're very much aware of survival. And, the ego is our survival mechanism. And for a long time, we've been taught we must reject our ego, yet it is the part of us that keeps us alive. It's our survival mechanism, and with it comes our instincts. Animals have instincts, and they utilize them, and they utilize them well. And, you know, we can learn from that, that if we listen to the survival, the will to live that we have, maybe we wouldn't give in to feelings of wanting to let go of our lives through suicide. Maybe we would stay and live another day. Maybe we would find another way, because animals do that too. They find another way. They live for another day. And they never, you know, they make their moves. They're not a gunner. I don't know if the Americans use that word. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. It's an Australian expression. Instead of going to, I'm going to. So somebody's saying, oh, you know, I'm going to get a degree. I'm going to go down the shops. I'm going to. They tend not to do it. It's all talk, no action. When you're a doer, you've already done it. So you talk about, I did this, I did that. I'm a doer. And I'd rather be a doer than a gunner. And animals are doers. Animals will just get out and do whatever they have to do. They don't laze about and, you know, the only time that they're going to laze about it is if everything, all their needs are met. And you tend to not see that even with crows who live in the city and have all the food that they need. They don't tend to be lazy. They tend to be mischievous. So here in Brisbane, we've got a problem with the crows, and they're a protected species. But the problem is there's enough food and shelter for them and water. So their basic needs are met. So now there's time to self-actualize. But the whole point of living, if you're a crow, is to, you know, find your basic needs and procreate. So what are you going to do next? You're going to get up to mischief. And the thing that they're doing is they're going to train stations and they're stealing windscreen wipers off the cars. And they're getting and they're nicking things and they're up to mischief. And you see that with cats. Some cats will steal trinkets and things from people's yards and their houses. When they don't have to worry about their basic needs, they will start to get up to mischief. And mischief isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just that in human terms, it would be self-actualization. So you would be, now I have time to learn that thing. Now I have time to grow in who I am. They don't give up, even if someone else is, you know, like there's two spiders, and one's not as good at building the web as the other, and so it catches half the food that the other catches. It's not going to give up. It's not going to say, well, that's it. I'm just going to go over to this corner here and just wait till I starve to death. It tries and tries again to build that web. It models its web off of the other, and it begins to get better and better. And, you know, the beasts of burden. How many times have you seen bullocks long hauling loads in the past, horses, donkeys? They don't sit there and make a big complaint. Elephants, you know, the beasts of burden, they stay calm, they deal with it. And they deal with the sadness of often being mistreated because of it. But, you know, when they've got a chance to, they'll be proud of who they are. They'll be tall and they'll be proud. And, of course, young animals have fun. And, you know, we need to remember to have fun. We get into a state where we're so serious about the rat race and we forget that life is for living and having fun. And animals can be also, I'm trying to think of the word, surprising. They can be misunderstood and surprising. As a, you know, a crocodile, it's a apex predator here in Australia. Especially with global warming, we're starting to see crocs swimming further and further down through south, further and further down the coast. And the thing about crocodiles is They're ferocious predators. They'll eat a human being. They'll eat a grown man. That's no problem. You're 6'5", you're built like muscle, like the Rock or someone. Yum, yum, you're a good meal. For a decent croc, they end up to about 8 feet long. So, yeah, no problem there. But they can be incredibly gentle parents, incredibly gentle. And, you know, they know how to nurture and they know how to love. So no matter how fierce they can be, they're also very gentle and kind and loving. And they'll make the sacrifices in order to get on with life. Now, they stay humble. And as I said in the beginning, they're absolutely who they are. They're not trying to be someone else. They're not confused about themselves. And a lot of humans, especially today, are. A lot of humans are very, very confused about who they are. They're having lots and lots of problems with it, and it's why we're going through this whole great balancing, one of the reasons, I should say, because we have a lot of people who are confused about who they are and are making problems for other people who weren't confused about who they are, and now they're confused about how we're going to go in the world. Other people are certain about who they are and doing the same thing to people who were previously not confused. So we've got this whole melting pot of God knows what going on in human society that well, if you step back from it, you think, oh, my goodness, you're human beings first and foremost. Be proud of being human. You got to that stage of incarnation. How you identify should be human. And, you know, a pig identifies as being a pig. It doesn't know any different. It doesn't know any different. It's just a pig. You know, a grasshopper identifies as being a grasshopper. It's just a grasshopper. It doesn't say, I'm a grasshopper who identifies as being a locust. It's the same thing. It is what it is, what it is, what it is. And we are who we are, who we are, who we are. We all just need to calm down and start to see. The animals are teaching us that. What do you think, David?
Well, I was thinking about love, and you were talking about how even some of these ferocious-seeming animals are so loving to their young. I was thinking about a friend of mine who's very detached from his emotions, has a hard time expressing love to other people, but he has this little dog that he got at the age of 84, I think. He'd never had a pet before, and it's a joy to see him with the bond that he has with his pet. He is so loving toward it. Unfortunately, that has not translated into his relationships with people, but I think the pet has provided him with drawing out a latent ability of his. I mean, we all have the potential to love, and unfortunately, for whatever reason, a lot of humans can't do that, or they can't do unconditional love, as I was talking about earlier. But, you know, he's really opened up this man's world and taught him some emotions that I don't think he was in touch with at all. So animals can draw that out of us very easily. And you just don't know what it's like. If you've never had one, you just don't know what benefits that you can have from owning a pet. I was going to tell a story about a couple of other cats, Abigail and Samantha. They were born in the wild, and they were born out at my parents' camp. And my husband and I went out there on the night of a commitment ceremony. This was long before we got married. We had a commitment ceremony first. And we went out there for a honeymoon. And when we got there, there was this cat that came up and approached us. She was very, very friendly and never seen her before. She's out in the middle of nowhere. And she disappeared. And the next day we talked to a neighbor who said and we told her about the cat, and she said, oh, yes, she had a litter. And they're hiding underneath a neighbor's porch. She said there had been four of them, but one of them had been killed. And she said, you know, I'm hoping that somebody can get them out and adopt them. So that day we went and we took cans of tuna fish and placed them underneath the deck, and one by one we snatched up these little feral kittens. And Robbie and I ended up adopting two of them, and his cat was Samantha and mine was Abigail. Well, you know, you can't choose, you can choose your pets, but they choose you. And as it turns out, Samantha chose me and Abigail chose Robbie. And so we ended up switching ownership, if you will. And poor Abigail had feline leukemia and only lasted 2 years. But Samantha's still alive at the age of 17, and I cherish her. She's the old lady of the house. And when we brought some young kittens into the house, she, who had never been a mother, immediately took to the role and mothered those little cats. She would clean them, and she would, well, she was a mother. I don't know what else to say. And today, they all take care of each other and groom each other. It's really lovely to see. So that's my little kitty cat story, my other one. And I just wanted to make the point that we think we choose our pets, but they actually choose us. And I believe that's done at a spiritual level. Cats and dogs or whatever kind of animals we may adopt come to us and serve a certain purpose in our lives that may be unknown to us, but they are absolutely precious. And so that's all I have to say there, Kat. How about you?
Do you remember that show, Touched by an Angel?
Oh, yes.
With that beautiful African-American woman. I can't remember her name. And the
Della Reese.
The Irish lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you seem to keep getting touched by animal angels.
Oh, yes.
Who suddenly turn up
mm-hmm.
while you're out and about.
Well, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I just remember that show, you know, when these angels would be wandering the highway as hitchhikers, deliberately getting picked up by their charges.
Yeah.
And it just seems like you're doing the same thing. You're wandering the highways of life, deliberately getting picked up. These animals are deliberately getting picked up by you so that they can be with you while you go through your life story.
Well, I think that's a beautiful metaphor, because I do believe that pets are angels. They sense what's going on within us. I know that my husband's been very lonely since he moved out, and the dog that we jointly own, who's living with him, is so nurturing and comes to him if he's crying. He comes and lays beside him and is just such a source of comfort. And, you know, I believe that pets are angels. And I don't know. I don't have anything else to say about that. That's my belief.
Yeah, well, you know, certainly... you know, when it comes to animals, my personal belief is I do not own them. I cannot own an animal. It owns itself. It has its own mind and its own body and its own life. I don't own that life. I simply am a guardian for the animal. I'm responsible. I take on the responsibility of having the animal in my life. I take on the responsibility of caring for it. But caring for it is not owning it. It's doing the things that it needs to be done to keep it alive and keep it happy. And just as I care for my children, I do not own them. They are not my possessions, and neither are my animals. My children ask me about this understanding that I have, and because we keep fish. And they said, but don't you own the fish? And I said, no, they're domestic animals. They've incarnated as domestic animals. However, each and every fish that is in the aquarium owns itself. I am simply there as a responsible for the care of that fish. It has an awareness of me. Some of them have a deeper awareness of me than others. They all know that my hand, because my hand goes into the aquarium and moves about things and tidies stuff up and there's maintenance done. They all know there's going to be water drained and refilled. They're aware of a certain routine in their lives, but they're not aware of the human world that has been built around them. They've only ever known tank life. But that does not mean that they are owned by anyone but themselves. It just means that humans, with our construct of money, have let that change hands so that one could care for it over another, over another, over another. But I pulled a vet up recently when I had Pericles, my black cat, in for his old man checkup. He's coming up to 17 this year. And they kept referring to me as his owner, and I had to say, look, I'm not his owner. He can leave at any time. He goes out the basement, throws the poo in the garden. So he goes outside. He likes to sleep in the sun under the bushes. He doesn't have all his teeth and he's old, so he's not out catching creatures. He's well-fed and he's wearing a bell. And He can leave any time, though. I'm not holding him here. He's not my captive. He's with me because he belongs with me, not to me. And there's a freedom in understanding that when you get to that place within yourself that you don't have to hold on to them so hard, thinking that you own them. Because what do you really own anyway, David? In the end, you're going to die and it's all going to be left behind. You don't. You have a responsibility to things when you incarnate, to first and foremost to your body, once you learn how to look after it from your parents, and then beyond that, it's all on loan from the planet until you croak. So how could we own any other creature? We simply take on the responsibility of caring for them. We take that from Mother Earth, from Mother Nature. She had that responsibility and then we took it from her. Or she handed it over to us. So that's my belief system about animals, and I certainly agree also that some of them are incarnated as higher beings that have chosen animal form to incarnate to assist the human stage in life. I've seen it time and time and time again. And even in my own life, I've seen it with my dog, Jasper. I've never been a dog person. I had two difficult sons to raise and I did not want a third child, which is what I see a dog as. I did not want the responsibility of having to teach the dog, having to toilet train the dog. Everything comes with a dog. I didn't want it. But we were chased through the streets by a man one time. He had a panel van and I was in the car with my son. And I stopped feeling safe. I actually started leading him to the police station. When he realised that's what I was doing, he drove away. So I started looking for a dog. And we came across this dog. My son fell to his knees crying. He wanted the dog. So we adopted him. And he ended up being a beautiful soul, absolutely beautiful soul, who saw me through some extreme difficult times in my life. And when he couldn't walk with us anymore because my life was going to change so much that there would not be a place for him to walk with us, he left. And I didn't know he was leaving, as in he passed on. I didn't know that that was going to happen until probably 5 months later, I saw how much my life was changing, and then a year later, I understood why he couldn't come. But I got messages from Spirit that he was still around, and he's always very strongly in our hearts. His name was Jasper. And now my son is pretty certain he's reincarnated, and he now lives with him, so has Aragorn, this massive puppy that... Jacob Scott is 6 months old and already 60 kilograms. It's a huge dog.
Oh, my.
But he's a dog that doesn't like many people, but he loves me and he loves Liam, my other son. And he falls over himself to talk to us, but everybody else he holds back from, and he hasn't really had a lot of time with us, yet he knows us. He absolutely knows us. That's the other thing. And Prometheus, my cat, I'm certain he's the reincarnation of Aphrodite, the female cat that I had, who was in our lives for about 18 months before she got run over. And I heard her when I got home. First of all, Pericles was at the gate telling me something was wrong when I arrived home. And I rang around and went into denial. I heard her. I heard her on the roof and I heard her in the tree, but I could not see her, and so did Jacob. He heard her as well. I went to spiritual church on the Sunday and got like a knowing hit my heart, and I knew she was gone. And I started to cry. I could not stop, and I knew it to be true. And when I went to bed that night, she jumped through my window, felt her land on my bed, and I said to her, "Come back as a big, fat, lazy male cat. So you never wander from home," because female cats are hunters and they tend to wander, and that's how she got run over. And so then I was led to Prometheus, and he knew the house. I had a particularly weird sort of shaped house with a strange laundry that was inside outside. He knew the whole house. He knew the whole thing. And he meowed the same way. And we just went, "Oh, my goodness, you're the reincarnation of Aphrodite." It was undeniable. But that's a whole other show, isn't it?
It is. And I have one that's come back to me, too, and probably more than one, if I think about it. But the kitty cat, Samantha, that I was talking about is the reincarnation of a cat I had named Princess, who was killed by a car. And Samantha is just as sweet as can be. She immediately reminded me of Princess, and she speaks like Princess. She acts like her. It's amazing. They do come back. So speaking of which, I'm looking at the time, and we've just about run out of time. So I think we'll forgo the meditation tonight, Kat, and maybe you would like to share something about the Facebook page before we close?
Yes, so you can find us on The Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards at Facebook. Please get on there and click like and share it with your friends. Old podcasts on there, so you can listen to us on demand. If you want to make comment on the podcast, the notification bell will come up and we'll be able to communicate with you about that. If you would like to make comment during one of our shows, click on the current podcast that you're listening to that will be advertised in the news feed, and just write in the comments below. You can also call in and as to how are in the description. We'd love to have you tell us your ideas for topics for the show. This is your show, and we're here to serve you, to discuss things that are important to you in your life. So please communicate with us, get to know us, and tell us what you'd like to hear us talk about next. And get involved. We always love it when you get involved.
Thanks, Kat, and that certainly is true. We love to have callers. We'd love to have your input on the show if you feel comfortable doing that. So consider tuning in again next week or another week, and consider sharing with us on the topic. So So with that said, I'm going to wish everybody a good day and a good night, and we'll be in touch via radio next week. Okay.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.